Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager, and it's the Fireside Chat. I asked the number beforehand so as to avoid having you have to hear me ask Megan. What number is it?
191.
I thought I remembered it correctly, but I wasn't sure. 191. That's an ode to doing something regularly. You get a lot more accomplished than if you bunch things up and then don't do anything. Anyway, welcome. It's the Fireside Chat. It is, for those of you not familiar, it is a chance for me to just spontaneously offer you ideas. There is no script. It is no teleprompter. Well, that would imply a script. It's just a chance to offer you some of my thoughts about life, about what's going on, and then take your questions. And you now see Snoopy is with the world famous Otto. So I decided to talk to you about the current highest value. I mean, there are a few competitions. I guess wokeness is the highest value, but this one is positive sounding. Wokeness doesn't sound positive, and it is being safe. Safe. Do you know, it's safe has gotten so holy, if I may use that term, that people often say now, not bye-bye, take care, see you tomorrow, be safe. This is the new thing, and I got to tell you, I can't stand it. I mean, obviously, I don't yell at somebody who says be safe. They mean well, but it's a bad thing. If I had followed the admonition to be safe my whole life, I would not be here on this Fireside Chat. You would have no idea who I am. I never played it safe. It never even occurred to me, is it safe? You know when is it safe occurs to me? I'll tell you when. Obviously, if I were to take a new medication, so I would ask the doctor, is it safe for X period of time? Is it safe if I were to go bungee jumping? How safe is it? But as a rule in my life, I never asked, is it safe? And I have been blessed because of that. Because if you play it safe, you will not live a full life. And we have raised now two generations, if not three, to be safe. The examples are so legion that I could spend the whole half hour just talking about just giving you examples. When I was a kid, do you know that people who owned a swimming pool all had a diving board? Did you even know that? This is probably news to you, right? Because you're so young. When I was your age and even older, everybody had a diving board. Then one day they decided diving boards were not safe. Now, why were diving boards not safe? Were people putting the diving boards over shallow areas? Well, then they were crackpots. The issue is, who's the nut who did that? You might as well not have a swimming pool if you're going to be that foolish. What is wrong with a diving board over the deep area of a swimming pool? Did anybody ever get hurt? People get hurt in swimming pools. I actually know a family whose wonderful, wonderful son drowned in the family swimming pool. Kids drown in swimming pools. So they put these barriers around. And by the way, there's a good example. I had a swimming pool in my homes in Southern California. My current home does not have one, but I did when my kids grew up. And I did keep a screen type barrier around the swimming pool. I don't believe in silly risks. Clearly, if there's no barrier to the pool, a kid can crawl in and drown. I recognize that. I don't believe in silly risks. That's a silly risk. There's no gain in not putting up, while kids are small, not putting up some barrier around a pool. But otherwise, you always have to ask, what do I lose by being safe? Safe exacts a price. And the price it exacts is not living a full life. I know I addressed this in part over a year ago when safety was obviously the big deal and I was opposed to the lockdown and much else. And I said at the time, what was it? I said, until it's safe means never. Is a good phrase that I came up with. Until, and I'll tell you where I got it from. And it was people telling me, I've been broadcasting for over 35 years, so I've talked to a lot of people. And I would, let's say I would mention that I visited Israel, and then a person would call my show and say, oh, I would love to go to Israel, but I'm going to wait till it's safe. So, of course, I pointed out they would never go, and they never went. That even though it's safer in Israel, except when rockets are coming down, which is pretty rare, and even then it's probably safer in Israel, than in many major cities in the United States, I'm sorry to say, very sorry to say. Believe me, you and any of you, man or woman, you would be safer walking alone at midnight in Tel Aviv than in Detroit, Philadelphia, New York, Los Angeles, or so many other cities. You wouldn't even walk alone at night in most of those cities. You would in Tel Aviv. The odds are nothing would happen to you, or Jerusalem, or Haifa, or any of the major cities of Israel. So, nevertheless, people don't go because of various terror incidents or a war with Hamas. Be that as it may, they never went. So they missed out on a tremendous life filling a trip, especially those who are religious, Jew or Christian. Okay, so that is applicable to everything in life. If you don't do stuff because it's not safe, I mean truly unsafe, I'm not for it either. I gave the example of the barrier around the swimming pool, but otherwise, I'll give you an example. By sheer coincidence, both my sons live in different parts of the country on their own. They told me, I think, the day that they were going to do it, they were going to jump out of an airplane. They were going to parachute out of an airplane, which not something that I had done. And I was thrilled. As a father, you have some instinctive concern, but I am rational. The odds of their parachute not opening with all the precautions that there are were very, very small. Therefore, I weighed the chance of a parachute not opening versus a son who has the desire to take on life. I'll take this one any day. They will lead a better life. And sure enough, both did it, and I think about a year apart. And anyway, they had a great experience jumping out of an airplane. Incidentally, I would have done the same thing. I'm not a big fan of heights, but I don't like to be afraid of anything, and so I probably would have done the same thing at their age or even a little older. Okay. That's life. If you want to be safe, you won't do anything. I'll give you another example that has nothing to do with the physical realm. If you want to play it safe, don't get married. You want to play it safe, don't have children. Right? I mean, think about it. And I have, again, I learned this from my radio show. People would call me up and I'd say, I always talk about marriage because I want everybody to get married. And I would say, are you married? And then, no, I'm not married. Anyway, I have a male-female hour every week on my show, which often addresses this subject. But I address it on other hours as well. And they would say, well, you know, I don't want to get married. And I go, why? Well, my parents were divorced. And, you know, so many marriages end in divorce that I don't want to take the risk. Which is the same thing as play it safe. And I always ask people who tell me that their parents are divorced, so that's why they won't get married. I always have a great question for them, if I may call my own question great. And that is, I'm curious, if your parents had a bad car crash, would you drive? And they all say, of course. Well, why? Your parents had a bad car crash. Why is a divorce different from a bad car crash? Their marriage crashed. The analogy is almost perfect. Their analogy had a terrible crash. So therefore what? To me, it's a non sequitur. One has nothing to do with the other. My parents divorced, so I won't marry. I might divorce, so I won't marry. That's correct. You might divorce. That is correct. So you really believe it is better to have lived a life where you never experienced marriage and or children and thereby never divorced? That's true. If you never fly, you'll never crash. If you never drive, you'll never crash. If you never travel, you'll never have any of the dangers associated with travel. One of my favorite countries to visit is India. I've been there 4 times, and I would go tomorrow a 5th time. And people say, "Oh, I wouldn't go to India." And I go, "Why wouldn't you go to India?" So Israel's not safe. What's with India? Well, I don't know. I just picture, you know, animals walking in the street, and you know, there's not cleanliness, and I'd be afraid about what I eat, and which is nonsense. I mean, the best restaurants I've eaten in my life were in India, because they make vegetarian food so delicious I could actually see being a vegetarian only in India. Anyway, this is all of life. You're playing it safe, so you won't live life. What do you want on your tombstone? He played it safe? She played it safe? But it applies to everything. That's my point, including getting married and having children. Children are a real gamble. You want to play it safe, don't have children. On the other hand, you're not living a full life if you don't have children. Now, I'm saying this even if you can't have children. I'm not blaming you if you can't have children. I'm just telling you a fact. Life is richer if you have children. And I want to lead a rich life, not a safe life. And likewise, in what I've done, I said to you at the outset, if I played it safe, I wouldn't be doing this fireside chat. I never would have achieved what I achieved if I'd have played it safe. I get a lot, even to this day, as many of you probably know, I get a lot of hate. You don't believe me? Put my name in Google and put any expletive you want. Any a-hole to the F word, anything. You will get tens of thousands of hits describing me in horrific terms. If I'd have played it safe, I wouldn't stand for what I stand. I get a lot of flack for what I stand. And so does PragerU. We don't play it safe. We don't take silly risks, but we certainly don't play it safe. I just tell you, I was raised this way. I think it's both in my nature and the way I was raised. When I was 7, my parents sent me to my aunt in Florida from New York. I grew up in New York. At 7 years of age, I flew alone, and in those days, nobody handheld you. You went on the plane as if you were 70 years old. You just went on the plane. My parents didn't sign any papers. No flight attendant was there to take care of me. I got off the plane. My aunt met me. All was good. When I returned 6 weeks later, I think it was, my parents were late to the airport. I got off the plane. I got my own luggage at 7. And it's a Prager family great story. When my parents finally got to the airport in New York, what did they do? What did they see? They saw me tipping a porter with my luggage. I didn't know the story. My parents told me the story. I didn't remember what I had done. But it didn't freak me out that my parents weren't there. They weren't there, so they'll show up. I'll just get my own luggage. Do you know how good that was for me? In 6th grade, I traveled from Brooklyn to Manhattan by subway in the morning and then back in the evening. I went to a school in Manhattan. I rode the subway on my own in 6th grade and came back. It was often dark. Whenever my mother would get a little more worried about something, my father would always say, "What are you going to do? Keep Dennis in a china closet?" I didn't even know what a china closet was. When I was a kid, I thought it was a closet made in China, and I didn't know what the point was. But I understood my father's intention. You can't protect him. That's the way it is. And it was great. So I grew up with diving boards and I grew up flying alone. And I grew up with the attitude that if you want to jump out of an airplane, jump out of an airplane. This was all good. I made a point on my radio show, which is, I admit this will be a little tough for some people to hear, which is maybe a good thing. Isn't risk-taking part of masculinity? Are women attracted to men who want to play it safe all the time? Which means fearful. My read of female nature is such that they don't want a man who's afraid. That a big part of what makes a man appealing, what makes a man masculine, is that he doesn't play it safe. She doesn't want a crazy risk taker, because that's not appealing either. But not a man who's afraid and not a man who won't take risks. So diving boards were good, and all these other things kids don't play with now. Play it safe. Why are there safe spaces on college campuses? To make college kids into babies, which is what they do in the safe space. They give them hot chocolate and they give them stuffed animals. You mean a speaker comes to campus with whom you differ and you need a safe space? This is child abuse, having safe spaces when speakers come who with whom you differ. Don't tell me be safe if we meet. And don't tell yourself be safe. Don't be ridiculously negligent, but don't play it safe. Okay, time for a video question. Take it away.
Hi, Dennis. It's Amala. Obviously, you know me. I'm 20 years old. I'm in Los Angeles, and Juneteenth is coming up, and I have plenty to say about it. But the left uses Juneteenth as an excuse to say that America is systemically racist and that we're dealing with systems founded in white supremacy. I'm curious to know what your opinion is on that.
One of my favorite people, Amala. Okay. I'm not sure what Juneteenth has to do with white supremacy. That was when blacks were liberated from slavery. It would seem to me that that's white penitence, white saying we're not supremacist, that slavery based on race is evil. So I don't know how Juneteenth got involved with white supremacy. Let me make a point that I make all the time. Every country, every society, every tribe, every ethnic group, every religion had slavery. Every. I know of no exception on earth. Blacks had slaves. Indigenous peoples in America, in the Americas, had slaves. Asians had slaves. Muslims had slaves. Christians had slaves. Muslims enslaved Christians. It was universal. So condemning America for having slavery without saying I'm condemning every society on earth is anti-American. It's not anti-slavery. It's anti-American. Very important thing to realize. If everybody drove 80 miles an hour in a 55 mile per hour zone, but you only spoke about whites who drove 80, you would be anti-white. If you only spoke about blacks driving 80, you would be anti-black. You need to condemn the action of driving 80 in 55 mile per hour zones. You have to attack slavery as evil. So what distinguished America was not that it had slavery, but that it abolished it, and that it abolished it at the cost of more people than any war in American history. You don't ask about any country, why did it do what every other country did? You ask, or a people, you don't ask, why did they do what everybody did? Because everybody did it. That's the obvious answer. You ask, why did they do what almost nobody did? Almost nobody abolished slavery when England and America did. That's the point. Then you ask, why did it happen? The same thing with getting people out of poverty. Poverty was the human norm throughout history, everywhere. Only a tiny fraction of people were not impoverished. So you don't ask, why is there or was there poverty? You ask, why were vast numbers of people lifted from poverty? And the answer is capitalism. No one was lifted from poverty in any numbers until capitalism. But if you don't care about lifting people from poverty, you're anti-capitalist. Makes sense. All right, here we go. Denver, 35 years old in Texas. Do you know, I never heard of a person named Denver. Did you? First name. Mm-mm. I'm preparing to ship out to boot camp at 35. Cool. And looking at the trajectory of this administration and its early executive orders, I am concerned that our military will have mandatory training or policies which undermine the foundation of the nation I'm fighting for. What can I, as a sailor who must obey all lawful orders, do? Some examples that I'm concerned with that could become military dogma, CRT, critical race theory, 1619, skin color does matter, etc. That's true. I don't have a good answer for you. I don't know how you oppose doctrines. You can't oppose orders necessarily, but you might be able to speak up with regard to doctrines. I think there is free speech to a certain extent. It's still in the military. But I'll give you just a larger note. Everything, and I mean everything, the left touches, it destroys. There's been no exception since Lenin and the Russian Revolution over 100 years ago. And I'm not talking liberals. I always make a distinction between left and liberals. Liberals have done a lot of good. The left has never done good. And it's the next thing. There are very few things it has not ruined, like colleges, elementary schools, high schools, sports, late night comedy, journalism, religion. It's endless. And now the military. That's my fear. The purpose of the military is to defend your country, not to be woke. All right, Rebecca, 22, Ohio. Hello, Dennis and crew. Hi, crew. Hello, Dennis and crew. I have a very important question. How do you decide which books to get rid of? I have too many books for my living situation right now. As the internet increasingly attempts to rewrite reality, do I prioritize the nonfiction books over the fiction books I read for enjoyment? I've also been keeping a lot of my favorite children's books that I know. Funny, I hadn't seen this in the list of questions. I have the same dilemma, Rebecca. I would put them in storage rather than get rid of them, precisely for what you say, for the reason you said the rewriting of history will make these older nonfiction books all that more important over time. You're absolutely right. I have about 6,000 books. My home does not allow for more than 2,000. I have thousands elsewhere. Why is that funny?
You're not exaggerating because you don't exaggerate. So
yes, no, I'm not exaggerating at all, right. I didn't even realize that, yes, it is a lot. You're right, now that I think of it. I love books. Well, this room is surrounded by books. Every wall but one is books. And they're packed in, and this is basically only on one or two subjects in this room, mostly religion. I will only note something that comes to my mind that I'd like to make an appeal to all of you. Whether you're 22 like Rebecca or 52, I ask you for your sake and for the society's sake to have at least one bookcase filled with books in your home. I used to walk into homes and there was almost no home without a bookcase or a few bookcases with books. Even if people didn't read them, it was a statement, books are important. Books are important. You should have a bookcase with books, period. That should just be a way of your stating ideas and history and whatever subject it is that's important. It's a statement to yourself. If you have children, it's a statement to your children. If you have guests, it's a statement to your guests. Everyone who comes into this room that I'm talking to you from in my home marvels and remarks about the books. And it's always in a positive way. Okay, Nick 30, Los Angeles, California. Hello, Dennis and Otto. My wife and I are expecting our first child later this year and are very excited, as you should be. Choosing a school for our child is in our future, but we are very worried with the state of the education system. What would you recommend to conservative parents where homeschooling is not an option? Do you think the better option is to invest in a private Christian or Catholic school? Is the best option to make an effort to move to a conservative state and school district? I would like you to see the column that I wrote about Americans in large numbers taking their kids out of elementary schools, high schools, and colleges. The damage that they are doing to your child in most cases, not in all, in most, is perhaps irreparable. It is damage to their spirit, to their innocence when they are young, to their value system, and to their relations with their parents, with you, their parents, if you, the parents, are watching. It's hard to overstate the damage that schools are doing to kids. I strongly advocate homeschooling. You say it's impossible. I don't know why it's impossible. People decide what's impossible. It may be impossible for you to run a 4-minute mile, that's true. But by and large, the only things that are impossible outside of the physical realm are what we decide are impossible. So that's something for you to think about. But what you need to understand is the damage that you are probably doing to your child and very well might do to your relationship with your child later on, keeping them in a regular school, private or public. There's no difference in the damage that they do. I know there are exceptions, I acknowledge that, but there are very few. By the way, unfortunately, not all Catholic schools, not all Jewish schools, not all Christian schools are exceptions.
And we're at 30.
That's it already? Got a lot of good questions. Listen, I want you to know that we have the exact wording there. We're starting this week. Is that right?
PragerU's first kid book.
PragerU's first kids books are coming out. And that's at PragerU.com/kidsbooks. Kids books. That's pretty easy. I think you will love it. We are helping you teach your children good stuff. Just healthy, life-affirming, good stuff. So that's the website to go. Thank you. On behalf of all of us here, I will see you next week. Hey, everybody. I have really big news. We are now at PragerU publishing kids' books. Is that right, Otto? He is special. So we are now publishing books for kids called Otto's Tales, and they're terrific, and they teach a lot to kids. This is part of the prep program, Prager University Resources for Educators and Parents. And it's very important. We have been asked for so long to produce materials for little kids. and now we're doing it. So we'd like you to get this, as many copies as you can. We'd like you to get them for libraries. And of course, please contribute to PragerU so that we can continue to make these things. We are in a big battle for our country, and this stuff helps. Once again, do you agree, Otto? This is a special moment in my life. Thanks, folks. Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.